W, DA1CJW. There was nothing else available, Chad. Everybody wanted telephones, and they had to. Of course, these are all hardwired lines. It was a rotary dial, and it's true. Sometimes you get somebody on there that yak on the phone all day long. You almost had to tell them that you had an emergency in order to be able to use the phone. But they used to say, you know, have some courtesy, just talk for 5 minutes or so and then hang up and let somebody else use it. But every phone was a four-party line. It was either a single or double ring. It would ring between the hot line and ground. If it rang on the other hot line and ground, you did not hear that. The only way you were able to tell if there was anybody on the phone, you had to lift up your phone if you heard somebody talk. Then if you had some business, you just asked very nicely, you know, can I use the phone? And 99% of the time, they complied. No problems at all. But like everything else, there's always that 1% or 2% that you cannot control. K1CJW. Go ahead, Chad.
Pappy talking about it. He worked for the county. And I remember him, I don't know, several times saying that, you know, there's two old ladies on there talking that, you know, that's the grapevine around here. Telephone, telegraph, teleunit. That's what he used to say. Because nothing stayed secret in this community back then, because evidently those two were just, they were just on it all the time. But I do remember having to pick up the phone, and it was an old black Bakelite phone, and it had a rotary dial on it that was made out of metal. The numbers were behind it, and they were white with black letters, and you'd stick your finger in the dial and rotate the dial. And there were two or three of the numbers that were smudged off because it had been used so many times through the years. I know one of them was the number 2. I can't remember what the other one was. But and you would put the phone up to your ear, and you would dial the number. And then you'd hear this clicking, you know, as you released it, it was spring-loaded. And it would go back to, you know, the reset position. But I just remember that it would click, and the number of clicks corresponded with the number on the dial. So I'm not exactly sure what was happening down at the switchboard, but I'm assuming those clicks had something to do with, you know, some kind of, probably what we would call an audio file today, that prompted the switchboard to, you know, connect that number. KO4NUE.
The way it worked, to my knowledge, I've seen old telephone switchboards, but originally when it first started, a lot of small towns and all that, they always had to deal through an operator. There was no such thing as dialing a long-distance phone call in them days. You had to call the operator, and the operator would connect you, and then you get your bill at the end of the month, and everything was based on 3 minutes. Payphones was the same way. The only way they could tell what you put, when you put money into a payphone, the only way you could tell how much money you inserted in that phone is the way it sounded. A quarter sounded like a bell, and a dime and a nickel were the only coins you could put in there, and they had two different sounds. So the operator would listen to all these sounds until you put in a phone. K1CJW. Go ahead, Chad.
We'll let somebody else pick it up, Roland, for a second. I want to hear what they got to say about it.
With somebody else on there.
So nice to hear your recollections. Chad has introduced you to me, and by way of speaking, he said just good things, I should say. But it's a pleasure to meet you on the airwaves here. Talking about this sort of thing, I just am fascinated. Maybe this is a bit of reality for me that the world has passed by. Things that I recollect are ancient antiques and forgotten or never learned by some people. It's just fascinating to me. My head is just rolling around and around. It was the party line that was in our home was put in there in 1954, I think it was. And it was such a rare thing to have a phone that when we moved into the house 3 years later, we bought the phone. That is to say, it was installed and it remained installed and the account was just switched. We felt so fortunate to buy the house with a phone already there. But it was a party line and there were four people on the line. And I learned as a child, Roland, you probably don't remember anything like this, but when I was a child and I wanted to listen in, I learned to use the handset which you held in your hand, and the speaking part was on the bottom, of course, close to your mouth when the other part was at your ear. I learned that you could unscrew that and take the microphone element out. It was easy to remove. It had no wires on it or anything. It was just easy to remove. And you could sit there then and listen to the earpiece without anyone hearing your breathing or noises in the house or anything. I was just a little boy, so you have to forgive a little child. KK4JBQ.
KR4LCI. Are they completely done away with the party line phones? Anybody that was on a private phone, from what I was told at the time, had to pay a whole lot more money to have a private phone. If you wanted one that was reasonably cheap, you had to stick with the party line type phone. You know, this was during the transition time. KI4LCI, go ahead, Roland.
K1CJW back here. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You could unscrew the mouthpiece and just take it off. It was no wires to remove. It was just a pressure contact. And you could listen to all the local gossip and all that. And believe it or not, I'm guilty of that. I've done that. And a lot of other people used to do it, but a lot of times there was a lot of hassles. I remember a couple of times where people had emergencies, and there were so many people calling phony emergencies that when you did have an emergency, they didn't believe you. And they used to say, well, if they call for the emergency, just immediately hang up. But it did not happen all the time. But then the days gone by. K1CJW, this is going to be my final. It's time for my beauty sleep. Go ahead, Chad. I guess it's your turn.
You rest well, and Merry Christmas to you, sir. Please tell your daughter I said Merry Christmas to you. And 73.
Chris? Hey, Chad. Just caught the tail end of y'all's conversation. I used to work on some of the old switchboards, all the relays and stuff inside. Next time I see you, I'll show you a spring bender. That's what we use to adjust the contacts on those relays in the switchboards.
Colin was talking about switchboards, and let me make sure I got this. So when I first got in military in 1990, believe it was. We went out for our 5-day bivouac during basic training, and we set up those TA-312s, those field telephones that come in a bag, and then they got a little generator on it. You crank, you hand crank that generator, and it rings the switchboard. So we'd have one at guard post number one, guard post number two, the kitchen. You know, there'd be 7 or 8 of the field telephones out there. Well, somebody had to run the switchboard, because if the front guard wanted to talk with the second guard or the second gate, you know, somebody had to connect all them up. And it was called a SB303 switchboard. And coming over OD green box, you split it in half and laid one on top of the other. And one had cords coming out the bottom, and then the other one had the receptacle on top. And I had switchboard duty one night. I don't know, it was about an 8-hour shift, I believe it was. And you'd have to pull that patch cable out and then stick it over, you know, guard number one's ringing, and then you'd have to put it over to who he wanted to talk to, and, you know, the little light would stay on as long as they were talking, and then when they got done, you had to pull the patch cord out. But I see one of the worst times I remember getting my tail chewed out. I went to sleep at the switchboard. I had my head laying on the table, and drill sergeant called me. Took my rifle and caught me sleeping. Because I was sleeping, he took my rifle. Oh, my word. Oh, my goodness. I don't think I'll ever forget that. But, boy, that was something else. KO4NUE, somebody else pick it up.
So quick, Chad, them old crank telephones. We used to catfish with them things, throw the wires down there in the river, and crank on that thing, and the electrical shock would float those catfish up to the surface, and all you had to do was take your net and dip them up. But that switchboard that you're talking about, underneath where you plugged all those patch cables or relays, and that's what I got the spring bending tool for, that when those get worn a little bit, you have to go in and readjust them so they'll make contact. So I know what you're talking about. Y'all go ahead and carry on. KI4DOS.
UPY. You still in there, Anson? Go ahead. Battery dropped. Go ahead, Larry. You and Andy, pick it up.
4JBQ. It's a pleasure to talk with Roland tonight, and a pleasure to meet somebody else who's taken the microphone out of a phone to listen in. Mischievous thing for a child to do, I suppose. I never told anybody else that I did that. goodness gracious. But you mentioned many other things, like CDs. I've got probably 50 pounds of CDs around here. I don't play them anymore. And they really don't have that much usefulness, but, you know, there was a time when this was the only way that computer programs were distributed via a CD. And remember, what was it, America Online, and you get these CDs in the mail, so you could sign up for their internet service. Remember those things? Online, AOL. Yeah, and there was a time when you'd get one of those every week, and they'd give you 1,000 or 2,000 hours of time. You had to, you know, have your own internet service provider, but they, for a while, they had the monopoly on email and on network or internet content, everything filtered through their servers, and that didn't last for more than 5 or 6 years, maybe. But they made money while the sun shone, I suppose.
I still have an AOL account. I cannot remember the password. I remember the username, but I do not remember the password. But it's transmit3@AOL.com, and I use that for all my military traffic, you know. The other day, let me tell you this. It's been a week or so, I guess. My middle son was up here, Perry, and Holly Springs Fire Department's, I don't know, it's probably maybe 2 miles as crow flies from here. And they got a big alarm on top of the firehouse down there. It's probably 50, 60 feet up in the air, I'd say. And it's horrible sounding. And that thing has been up there since I was born, and they're required to test it once a month. So, Perry was out there in the yard, and that thing went off, and he said, "What is that noise?" And I'm thinking, son, that thing has been here you're 20 years old, and you don't ever remember hearing that thing go off, because it goes off once a month. But anyway, he said, "What is that? Why do they run that thing?" And I said, "Well, son, that's the civil defense alarm on top of the fire department." And he said, "Civil defense for what?" And I just laughed. You know, but when I was growing up, they used it for, you know, civil defense and community emergencies. That was the, you know, that was the fire alarm. If there was a fire in the community, they'd set that thing off, and people in the community would come running to help, you know. So, does anybody remember a civil defense alarm?
KI4LZI. I'm sure you may know this, Chad, but everybody now calls anything about disasters, emergency management, like DOC out there and the people in there with the county government. It's emergency management today, but you go back to the 60s, certainly even before I come along, back in those days, I called it civil defense then. Instead of emergency management, it started out just about war and such stuff as that. Then as time went on, it come to encompass natural emergencies too. Then they started calling it emergency management. KI4LZI.
BQ. All right, Chad, I don't know if this is before your time, you'll have to tell me, but when we were in elementary school, we learned to duck and cover. It was taught throughout the population of the United States through the civil defense, the emergency management of civil defense, that you could prevent you could survive a nuclear attack if you ducked under your desk and covered your head. If there are still, there were movies made during the time, and they're still available online. If you type in the search into a search box, duck and cover. You'll be able to see one of these little movies, the ones that I watched when I was a kid. And we practiced every week, duck and cover. And I knew then that if a bomb went off within, 200 miles anyway, that we'd be vaporized.
Oh, Lordy. KK4JBQ.
Go ahead, Walt. KI4LZ.
KI4LZI, KO4NUE, and KK4JBQ. Good evening. I was just sitting down here and was watching a little TV. I said, well, I'm going to see Bud. I went ahead and checked into the net, and I cut my radio off, but turned the volume down, and I looked over there, and the green light's on, and I turned the volume up, and got in on the tail end of that telephone conversation. I've got two of the old wall phones that my stepson gave me years ago. The old ones like Gary was talking about with the crank on it. I've got two of them things around somewhere that I was going to restore. But I remember the party lines and the, well, my grandpa had heart problems and I had to move in with him and my grandma so I could be there while with him while she was at work. And we got the first TV, I believe the first one in Greer, because everybody would come over to the house on Friday night to watch the Grand Ole Opry. And I remember when Channel 4 first signed on the air. That's a big deal. Everybody sitting around watching that the screen. It's hard to explain it. It's a picture of an Indian right in the center of it. It looked something like a dartboard. And when TV signed off after the 11 o'clock news, the news wasn't but a 15-minute program back then. The Atlantic Weatherman, of Stowe Hall, over there in Greenville. He's one that later on went to play Mr. Doohickey on the Little Rascals. But after they signed off that 15 minutes of news, they always played the national anthem. But boy, it's good to get back on here and get the talking. So I don't know who it goes to, but somebody picked it up.
Can you eat? Remember the duck and cover, Larry? Anna does too. She's sitting here listening, and we were talking about that. But Walt, I absolutely remember the national anthem. We had a Zenith big console TV. I shot the screen out one year with a BB gun I got for Christmas. But big thing. I mean, it was a, you know, entertainment piece. It, you know, it went in a cabinet, that kind of thing. I remember watching the national anthem, and it was grainy. It was not a very good picture video, you know. But I remember a couple times as a child, and Daddy. I remember Daddy. Daddy stood up and. We stood up and saluted. I remember him saluting the TV. I know that sounds corny, but, you know, I mean, that was patriotism back then, you know, and that's kind of just what you did. Daddy's a Vietnam vet, so, I get it. But I just remember there standing there with Daddy and both of us just saluting the TV, you know. It was a sight to see.
KO4NUE,
somebody pick it up.
DQ. Chad, do you remember saying the Pledge of Allegiance every morning at the beginning of the school day? Our principal would come on the intercom, which piped his voice into all the rooms, and he would lead the Pledge of Allegiance. We all stood up, put our hands over our hearts,
stood by the side of our desk, and there was a flag on the wall, and we were all facing the flag, and we said the Pledge of Allegiance. Yes, those days, unfortunately, those days are in the past. KK4JBQ.
KO4NUE. Springs, no, the principal did not call the Pledge of Allegiance. If you were a good student, and you had to be a good student, then you got sent to the office for the day with Miss Sloan. There was one secretary and one principal in the front office, and that was it. And your job, if you were a good student, was to help Miss Sloan all day. And any announcements that went over the PA system, you got to do it. And you got to lead the student body in the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think it was in the morning when class started, or maybe it was it was in the morning. It was before anything started. And if you did a good job for Miss Sloan, then you got to go help Mr. Holden put the flag up at the flagpole in the center of the driveway there in Holly Springs. And that was a big deal. I put the flag up. I get to, do the PA and da-da-da. It was an honor to do that. And I don't think I ever got to do it, but I know everybody that did was excited about it. KO4NUE.
What else you got?
Another thing Andy brought up, or you did, Chad, about the civil defense. I got my novice ticket in February of 1976. And they wanted to know if you wanted to join civil defense. So I took a little test and I joined. And you would not believe, nobody would believe where our meeting room was. It was in Spartanburg, underneath the city jail and city hall. You had to have your little civil defense card to go in there once a month for a meeting. That place is big enough to support 500 people for up to 6 months. They've got two wells down there. I mean, all of this is underground. They had two wells, and they got shelves and shelves of, back then it was sea rations. And they got bunks in there. They got generators for the electricity and all. And that was for the city leaders down there in the government and the well-to-do people. And they were five ham radio operators that were allowed in there. I could go in and I could take my wife and one child. And that was it. But who would want to come out in case of a nuclear disaster? I wouldn't want to come out of that hole and see what was left of the world. But we had it all set up. We had the antennas hit all over top of the city hall down there where we were totally self-efficient for up to 6 months to keep 500 people alive down there. And they've got another one. I don't know what they're going to do with it when they build this new courthouse, but they've got another one underneath the Spartanburg County Courthouse. And there was one out there at Pinewood Shopping Center. The only one that I was allowed to go to was the one underneath the Greenville County Courthouse. I mean, underneath the City Hall. But if you'll go to the courthouse anywhere now, some of these buildings in Spartanburg, in the stairway, it'll have a plaque there, a fallout shelter. And it's got a yellow arrow pointing to go to get to that fallout shelter.
Chelsea, guy, an early word about stole oil and Money's Rascals and all. I don't know, remember one, but on one of those episodes, I was one of the kids that was on that show at one point in time. I was back, way back in the 60s there, I was. And you was talking about the amateur radio and civil defense. Now, this is back, I don't know if even if you was around Walt when this happened, but I've been done some reading back during World War II. They had what would today be Races or either part of Mars, I'm not sure which. The War Emergency Radio Service, WEERS. And that's the only people outside of commercial broadcast that could do any transmit. Somehow, from my understanding, it's some Races, maybe Mars too. KI4LZI.
ABQ. So, Walt, there was a time, probably before 1961 in the Bay of Pigs, there was a time when it was thought a fallout shelter would guarantee the continuation of civilization. It was that serious. And these fallout shelters and how they would preserve a remnant of the population. You couldn't imagine that we could sustain a nuclear attack and everybody be okay. So tough decisions were made. But after the Bay of Pigs, and certainly after the power source for a nuclear weapon changed from uranium to plutonium, and then moved on to include multiple warheads that would burn, it was understood that there would be no chance. And at that point, I think the phrase was assured mutual destruction. And that's what kept us alive through a period of our history. It was a certainty that if war ever broke out, there would be no survivors. None at all. Human civilization would end. Now, that was years ago. What must it be today? I can't imagine that, and nobody should lose any sleep over that tonight. But that's kind of what it was like to grow up in the 60s, and 70s, and 80s. KK4JBQ.
Underneath the desk, and the principal would come and walk down all the hallways and look in the doors to make sure all the students were, you know, under their desks and were quiet. We had to be really quiet, and you know, it was, I mean, it's quite the to-do, and I'm not going to say it was traumatic, but I mean, it was, that's a real too strong of a word. It was concerning for a child. And I remember some of the kids younger would cry. And I just, I don't know, I couldn't imagine being an adult teacher trying to explain that to a young child. I don't remember, I remember Miss McAbee saying something about it, but I don't remember what all she said. And a couple of the kids, you know, were, you know, upset about, I mean, would cry, you know, we're going to die, you know, we're going to die. And Miss McAbee did a real good job, bless her heart. But we got under those desks. Boy, she'd make you get under that desk with that, she'd carry a yardstick. And she'd pop you with that yardstick if you didn't. But, oh my goodness, oh the days. My gosh, just the stuff has changed over the years. I can't believe, talking about it tonight, I can't believe it. Just sign of the times, I guess. KO4NUE.
KBQ. We have memories that others don't. We have opinions based on those memories and the experiences we had when we were children growing up. That, I don't know how you can't impart how it made you feel to be under threat like that. Society was really quite unstable as I witnessed it. And truthfully, the civil defense was maybe not that great a preparation, but it was all we had to believe in. And if you could preserve 500 lives for a period of time, that period would be much shorter than the half-life of the radioactivity outside the door. But it gave us some hope. And back then, just about the entire population was looking for something to give them hope that the world wouldn't come to an end any day now. So we lived through all that, and we come to the place where we are today. And I feel like I've had maybe a reprieve. We lived through some tough times, and emotionally charged upheavals, you know. As I said, the Bay of Pigs was in 61, I believe, and it was only 2 years later that President Kennedy, who inherited that Bay of Pigs mess from President Eisenhower, it was only 2 years later that Kennedy was assassinated. It was a rough and tumble time. Anyway, I'll take this opportunity to say, hello, Walt. It's great to hear you on the radio, and your voice sounds strong, but you continue to take care of yourself, sir. We have all missed you greatly. I've heard many comments on this frequency of how people have missed you. KK4JBQ.
I am. Yeah, I'm getting better. Day by day, it ain't progressing as fast as I would like, but it's like my doctor said, this didn't happen overnight. What they did, the VA, I use two different inhalers for, I got what they call a light case of COPD, and they wasn't doing as good as what the doctor wanted them to do, so they switched them on me. And I had to go get refills today. And in that little box, you unroll this sheet of paper with all the side effects to the drugs in there. That thing is 12 inches wide and was 14 feet long. And it it's like looking at an electronic schematic. They got the breakdown of all the different chemicals, and they got this like a schematic there with all the chemicals and how they bind together the molecules and all of that. You'd have to be a scientist to understand all of this. And nowhere in them instructions did it say, rinse your mouth out thoroughly after using medication. And that new medication eat all the lining out of my mouth. It even got the lining on my tongue, all my taste buds were gone. And right now my tongue feels like four good thick pieces of bologna. My tongue is still swollen up, but I don't have the sore throat. And it feels like somebody just took a razor blade and split my tongue and my lips. But believe me, I'm washing my mouth out, and then this stuff that they gave me that I'm taking now, it don't work too good with the ulcers I got. But, man, I'm glad to get back on the radio. And, Larry, I really appreciate the prayers. I know if anybody was praying for me out there, you would be. Yeah, I tried looking you up on QRZ to send you an email or anything, and I couldn't find nothing, and I didn't need to be talking anyway, but I'm getting better, and I know my buddy Andy, he's been asking about me, but I'm getting better. Yeah, that civil defense thing, it was really scary, and I know Chad. In the military, we went through all those training films about doing a washdown aboard ship. If you was in anywhere around a nuclear attack, but they wouldn't go. But I'm gonna tell you, in case of a nuclear attack, you're not gonna survive. K4OIM, whoever picks it up, go ahead and pick it up.
Training we did was called NBC, November Bravo Charlie, and that stood for Nuclear, Biological, and Chemical Warfare. And we had this special solution, you know, we had to wash things down, and they had all these special equipment to handle that kind of stuff. But we had to do training on that, you know. We set up all of the vehicles to go through a wash point and would, you know, wash that stuff. And, I mean, we did it for practice, and it was just, my gosh, at the labor just to do that. And sometimes we'd have to do it in our gas mask and NBC suits. And, That was not fun at all. I just remember having to do all that, and, you know, just, oh, my goodness. I don't know how we got on all these old memories like that, but one other I wanted to share, and then I'm going to step on out. Let me let this thing drop. I was reading the night before Christmas for the net tomorrow night. And when I grew up, my grandmother and grandfather lived in the home place on top of the hill here. The house is still there, but it's been sold outside of the family. But on Sundays, the whole family would come home every Sunday, and we would gather out under the oak trees at the home place and have a huge meal. I don't know, I expect there's 20, 30 people there. You know, the sons, the daughters, the wives, the grandkids, great-grandkids, they all came. And it didn't matter what come around on Sunday, but after church, we went to Grandma's. And boy, you you want to talk about a spread. Everybody brought something and put the, you know, picnic table out in the yard. And kids running around playing and so on and so forth. Well, you stayed most of the day. Remember in the afternoons when, you know, Uncle Buck and Joe would leave and take their clan back home. I'd beg to spend the night up there at Grandma's, and in the afternoons, right before dark, she had a graffinola that you wind up, made Victrola, in a cabinet. It's, she'd tell me about it every time. It's made out of tiger oak, and you had these booklets, albums of these thick vinyl records that went in the bottom of it. And at Christmas every year, the boys would always get Grandma another album of records. So, sit around and listen to that. And Granddaddy would drink coffee. And Grandma served his coffee with a saucer. And he would pour the coffee out of the saucer, out of the cup, into the saucer to cool the coffee, and he would drink it out of the saucer. Now, I don't know if any of y'all have ever seen that, but Granddaddy, I distinctly remember Granddaddy doing that. But we'd sit around that graffinola and listen to music. And one of the songs that I remember hearing is Bing Crosby, We'll Be Home for Christmas. And when Grandma and Granddaddy died, Grandma gives the graffinola to Daddy, told Daddy, when Chad gets old enough, I want him to have a graffinola. So we've got the Victrola here in the house. And every year at Christmas, we play Bing Crosby and sit around and listen. There's a speaker on it, but the speaker is controlled by the doors. You open the doors or close the doors to increase or decrease the volume. And I mean, it's in magnificent condition, and it still works. We play it once a year, and it's a big deal for our kids to sit around and listen to Bing Crosby on that scratchy old graffinola. But, oh, we just love it. So, KO4NUE, somebody pick it up.
Y'all carry on there. I'm going to have to go take some insulin. KI4LZI, but that graphy old record player there, I don't know if any of that, but there was some combinations that was on RadioBoulevard.com on some of the civilian stuff, entertainment stuff, where they had the radios and the record players together. You look on there, you might just by chance see something like that there. KI4LCI, going to take insulin.
GQ. Infinitely familiar with the Graffola and Victrola. I used to repair them. The mechanism inside that is called a clockwork mechanism. So now you know why a clockmaker and watchmaker was the person to repair them. I will not go into that because I know you want to turn in, but if you should just play this once a year, at some point, the record that you're playing is going to be so worn out, it will be really hard to listen to. So I would suggest that you make a recording of that. And someday in the future, you'll be playing the recording rather than the record, because every trip that needle makes in those grooves is grinding out the track. As a matter of fact, I have seen some that came for repair that still had up in the needle housing where you would attach the needles to the arm, up in there was a lot of vinyl. There's shreds of vinyl up in there that the needle had dug out during its trip round and round and round the record. Just a word of caution about, and you want to preserve that most certainly, and you can do that digitally. Okay. Well, yeah. Those are fabulous machines, by the way, and no expense was spared on the engineering. I mean, it was the latest thing when they were produced. And the oak, if it really is oak and not maple, is Quartersawn. Quartersawn oak has that tiger pattern. The actual tiger reference is applied to maple. Tiger maple has a pattern like that too. KK4JBQ.
If you're still in here, Walt.
about myself tonight. My daughter said she didn't want to be the one to find me dead in the morning. I cannot convince her to get a COVID shot. And my grandson's almost 6 years old, and she said, no, he is not taking one of them shots. Biden is a crook. You don't know what they put in your arm. But today I had to go to CVS down here in Edmond to get my prescriptions refilled. And I went ahead and got my booster shot. And I went up there to the house a little earlier and said, Daddy, what's wrong with your arm? I said, it's sore. What'd you do to your arm now? Have you done failed? I said, no, I went ahead and got my booster shot today while I was waiting on to fill my prescriptions. Oh, no, why'd you tell me that, Daddy? You're going to let Biden kill you. Biden ain't going to kill me. This COVID might kill her if she don't get this doggone shot. But I'm going to go ahead and say 7-3s, Larry. And again, I knew you'd be praying for me. And I am one that believes in prayer. I'll be on here tomorrow night. I got to listen to Miss Wendy read the story last year. And I've got a station up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I usually work every Christmas on 40 meters. They on there from December the 17th up till the 25th. It's an orphanage up there, and they send me a huge piece of wallpaper every year that I do work. But with that, I'll say 7-3s, Larry. I'm going to get up there and take my medicine and get some sleep tonight. So with that, I'll say 7-3s, Larry. I'll be here for you finally.